Beyond Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Wednesday, June 13th. Toronto has finally made their coaching choice. And what does that mean about the Pistons pick? We'll get into that today. This is your boy Matt Shook, the host of Locked On Pistons, an Associated Press writer in Chicago, Pistons follower for my entire life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thanks for making us part of your daily routine, whether it's the gym, maybe at the desk, at the job, the commute, while you're sitting around watching TV or something like that. Wherever you listen, thanks for doing so. And be sure to tell a friend about Locked On Pistons, especially the Pistons fans and rabid NBA fans in your life as well. Today, obviously, talking about Dwayne Casey, some second-day thoughts about the new coach, and also hear from Sean Woodley again for the second time this week. Maybe he's our new co-host here. He's from Locked On Raptors. He'll be talking about the team hiring Nick Nurse, Casey's number one assistant, moving over one chair to the big seat in the North. Also going to be talking about the Locked On Network's mock NBA draft, some thoughts I have about this draft. The top six picks in the mock NBA draft are out there on a podcast already, dropped early in the morning on Wednesday. You can check out the war rooms of the top six teams making their selections. A couple surprises in there, including the number one pick was a surprise. We'll talk about that a little bit later. And for Pistons playoff playback today, we're going back to the championship days with three big NBA Finals wins that all led to the three championships for the Pistons. A couple of them were the biggest wins in that series that I would argue as well. So we're going to be going back and talking about all three of them. Two of them happened on this day back in history, and one of them was yesterday in history as well. Well, welcome. We are now in day three of the Dwayne Casey era in Detroit. Not a whole lot to report from the last couple days. Press conference scheduled for next week. He's apparently meeting with some of the Pistons in L.A. this week, which is where those guys train in the offseason, and he has plans for over the weekend. Apparently, Andre Drummond, Blake Griffin, Reggie Jackson, Luke Kennard, and Stanley Johnson are all out there, and obviously those are five guys that he's going to want to get good rapport with as soon as possible. So I got no problem with that here as far as just dragging on to next week a little bit. I think next week there's not going to be a lot going on in Detroit sports either, so maybe they can grab some headlines, a little bit more juice out of the hire from that. And anything that they can get in terms of juice and attention in Detroit and Michigan sports is a good thing. Pistons pretty far down in the pecking order right now in Detroit sports, probably number three or number four, depending on where you stand with the Red Wings. And I'm not around Detroit these days, so I can't make my definitive opinion about where the Pistons stack up in terms of popularity in Detroit. Obviously, the NBA is much more popular than the NHL on a macro level, but we know that the Red Wings carry a little bit more juice in Detroit than maybe the average NHL team in their town, and likewise, the Pistons carry a little less juice than maybe the average NBA team in their town. Obviously, the Lions, number one, kind of like always in my lifetime anyway. Tigers clear number two, despite the painful rebuild. Well, I guess it's not painful yet, but the rebuild that's going on so far. The Tigers just more of a fabric of the state of Michigan for history reasons and past success. And the fact that it's a summertime sport and makes us think in Detroit and Michigan about the summer and all that good stuff. Ernie Harwell. So a lot of memories there, a lot of nostalgia that takes the Tigers up to another level in terms of the fabric of the state of Michigan. And with Miggy out for the year now, with the injury he suffered on Tuesday night, that takes some steam out of the Tigers' Cinderella story that's been hanging around these days. So yeah, maybe the Pistons can do a little work here to get up to higher in the echelon and having this Dwayne Casey hire, maybe get some people on board and get some people just a little bit excited about NBA basketball here in this town going forward. But first, we're going to start off with this clip from Sean Woodley of Locked On Raptors, as Casey's former team made a big decision on Tuesday for their head coach, sealing the eighth and final new head coaching job in the league. So eight openings this offseason, including Detroit, and now there are now eight new coaches. After an offseason last year where there were zero new NBA coaches, I was out watching game four of the finals with a friend on Friday night, a big basketball fan. We were talking about who are the new head coaches in the NBA this year. We went down the list in our heads of this coach and this coach, and couldn't think of any new first-year coaches. Come to see that, and something I should have known already, there were zero first-year coaches this past season in the NBA, and now eight of them going forward. So Casey's right-hand man and quote-unquote offensive coordinator Nick Nurse is moving over to the big spot in Toronto. And here's that clip from Sean talking about Nick Nurse with the Toronto Raptors.
Hey, what's up? It's Sean Woodley from Locked On Raptors, and the Raptors have hired a head coach after a month of waiting, a long, exhaustive search in which they interviewed a whole wide range of candidates, ranging from Sarunas Yasikevicius to Ettore Messina. They have landed with a guy who was in front of their faces all along, assistant coach, five-year assistant coach under Dwayne Casey. Nick Nurse has been named head coach of the Toronto Raptors. It's an interesting move. It is, you know, I think a lot of people, Raptors fans' initial reaction was that it was kind of not the right move. I think a lot of people kind of were hoping for a new outside voice to come in, considering you fired Dwayne Casey, who's an excellent head coach, who did a lot of great for this team. And if you're going to fire him, then maybe it's only a half measure to hire the assistant coach. I kind of disagree. I think Nick Nurse has a lot of potential. He's coached for 30-plus years. He coached in England. He's a two-time D-League Coach of the Year and also was the architect of the Raptors' brand-new offense this season. You know, it got a lot of headlines. It got a lot of press on how the Raptors kind of changed the way they play offense, and it was a top-five offense in the regular season, and it was the second-best offense by offensive rating in the postseason. For the first time in 5 years, offense is not what let the Raptors down in the playoffs. It was defense, and that is probably more under the purview of Dwayne Casey and other assistant coach Rex Kalamian. Nick Nurse was the offensive coordinator. So he is going to be tasked with sort of redefining how this Raptors team plays defense. And maybe it is just a limitation sort of implied by the players on the roster, but Nick Nurse is going to be tasked with sort of trying to find a new way for this team to play defense while also upholding the offense that it really maintained this season and showed that it can work in the playoffs despite maybe having some sort of limitations built in with guys like DeMar DeRozan running so much of the offense. A good thing about this move is that Nick Nurse already has a lot of institutional knowledge with the Raptors. He's been here 5 years, of course. He reportedly, from all accounts, has a great relationship with Kyle Lowry, which was always going to be a pressure point for any new coach coming in. It was always going to be necessary for that coach to be able to establish a relationship with Kyle Lowry, who notoriously has not been the easiest guy to coach in the world. And he even famously said when Dwayne Casey was let go that they never really saw eye to eye, but they still made it work and they forged a good relationship there. And it's good, at least in my mind, that Nick Nurse is coming in with an established relationship with Kyle Lowry, whereas if you come in with a new guy, maybe that relationship never really blossoms, and that's just a big risk with your best player who's still here for two more years on $30+ million a year. The other thing too with the Raptors is that they're in a pretty good spot considering all things. They're a 59 win team coming off of 59 wins with the one seed. They've made the playoffs 5 years in a row. Maybe they didn't need a big giant change to sort of shake up the entire room. Maybe a subtle move like this with Nick Nurse, he can sort of bring in his own ideas that maybe got suppressed under a guy like Dwayne Casey. Not to say that Dwayne Casey suppressed ideas, but you know, any person who is under a boss and eventually gets promoted, in theory, would like to do things differently than the previous boss. And there are things that they wish they could improve on and that they want to improve on when they get the opportunity. And I would assume we're going to see that from Nick Nurse. All reports are that he's a more experimental guy and sort of an outside-the-box thinker who I think will probably get the most out of sort of a strange roster the Raptors have, and hopefully maybe sort of use the regular season as a bit more of a testing ground for the playoffs as opposed to Dwayne Casey, who really sort of went out for a lot of wins in the regular season. And that's not a bad thing by any means, but at the Raptors' point in their win curve, I think it's more about trying to use the regular season as an establishing ground for what you're going to do come playoff time. And maybe Nick Nurse and his sort of experimental nature can kind of work on that and get the Raptors a little bit more prepared for what postseason basketball brings. Either way, I'll have a lot more about this on the next episode of Locked On Raptors. It should be out by now if you're hearing this. So tune into Locked On Raptors. This is about 30 minutes talking about the brand new Raptors head coach, Nick Nurse. We go in depth on the good stuff, the concerns, the bad stuff, and sort of the optics of it. Tune in to Locked On Raptors to hear that, and thank you for listening.
Yes, sir!
Thanks to Sean Woodley of Locked On Raptors for that take on the Nick Nurse hiring in Toronto, an unusual move. Trying to think about when that has happened in the past in sports where the head coach gets fired and then his assistant coach gets elevated to the spot. One recently in the NBA was Tyronn Lue when David Blatt got axed by the Cavaliers, but that makes sense because that was mid-season. It's hard to bring a new coach in that circumstance. That happens all the time with interim coaches, but maybe some of you listeners can reach out to me on Twitter and let me know of an off-season time where a head coach got fired, not he stepped down, but a head coach got fired and the assistant coach takes over right away. Strange circumstance there. Nick Nurse was there for the past 5 years with Dwayne Casey in Toronto. Casey was there for 7 years as head coach, and that was the best 5 years by far for Casey in Toronto, the five playoff years. So I guess that's the question that Pistons fans are thinking about now. Who should get the credit for the Raptors' success? Was it Nurse or Casey? Well, it sounds like Masai Ujiri, who runs the Raptors, believes it's Nurse, a guy who won two D-League championships before becoming an NBA assistant coach himself, came up through the American minor leagues, and he's 50 years old. He's been coaching for 30 years, so he's not a young guy, but he proved to be an innovative guy, especially this past season. He gets the credit for the offensive upgrade, the more modern NBA offense that Toronto had out there with more spacing, more three-point shooting. Well, before, it was more of an iso ball that DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry and those guys were doing. Defensively, that's always kind of been Dwayne Casey's calling card as a coach. But offensively, to his credit, you know, Casey's already talking about Blake Griffin being more of a point forward, putting shooters around the court around him and having Blake continue his development as a three-point shooter as well. Sounds like some of the innovations that Nick Nurse has made, apparently, will be following Dwayne Casey with him going forward. Interesting, obviously, to see which Raptors assistants follow Dwayne Casey or which stay in Toronto going forward, or will Pistons assistants like associate head coach Bob Baier, and then guys like Tim Hardaway, Rex Walters, Aaron Gray, Malik Allen, how many of those guys stay, if any? There were conflicting reports after Casey got hired, some coming from David Aldridge of TNT DA, said that there were questions about Casey's autonomy in hiring assistant coaches, but I feel like that must have been overblown. We haven't heard much about that since. Hard to believe that assistant coaches and the ability to hire whoever he wants would be a big sticking point, although I'm kind of reading between the lines here and thinking that maybe the money to be able to hire and offer those positions was really the sticking points there. Maybe Casey has bigger names in mind that he wants to bring in, and of course that means more dollars being brought to the assistant coaching staff, while Gores thought that the $7 million that he was paying for his head coach was enough and he wanted to do it on the cheap, like it seems like Stan Van Gundy kind of did with his assistant coaching staff. Not a big amount of big names, obviously Tim Hardaway being a big name in basketball, but not necessarily coaching. So we'll see what kind of staff that Dwayne Casey assembles as we go forward here. But anyways, check out the Lockdown NBA podcast this week every day, releasing six picks from our mock draft that we have. Look for that. Very popular episode last year. The top six picks episode is already out there. Some surprises. I do have some thoughts about the draft that I wanted to pass along. Obviously, we'll do more draft coverage next week as it pertains to the Pistons, talking about possibly trading up into the first round and what that would take, what possibilities might be out there. And then the second round pick that the Pistons have at 42. We'll talk more about some of the prospects that might be out there. But I want to talk about the top of the draft as it's on my mind right now with that mock draft coming out with the top six picks. I don't think that I would take DeAndre Ayton at number one. A big man who didn't excel defensively in college is kind of a red flag. I know he's got the athletic ability to improve there. And the body is something that everyone talks about. The shooting potential to be an offensive force is there as well. I just think that Luka Doncic makes a lot of sense for Phoenix as a playmaker, taking a lot of the pressure off of Devin Booker. He could be the long-term point guard solution there, although maybe not right away. But with Igor Kokoschkov, the former Slovenian national coach who has taken over as the Phoenix head coach this offseason, it could be a sign that Luka ends up going there. Ayton certainly believes he's going to Phoenix. He says he's not working out for anyone else, and he thinks he's going number one. Jonathan Givney of ESPN, formerly of Draft Express, said it is likely that he'll go there, so he's gone that far so far. But this is smokescreen season, and I think Ayton could have another thing coming. That's my bold prediction so far, is that maybe Ayton won't go number one. We'll see more as the week goes on here next week about more reports coming out, and I could be wrong about that, obviously, and we'll be pointing that out beforehand if it comes out that it looks like more of a surefire lock that Ayton goes number one. But really, though, with Luka, you have unknowns on both ends of the court. He did great in the Spanish League and the Euro League at a young age. But the biggest difference between those leagues and the NBA is the athleticism. And there's not a great history of European players being great on the wing. So that would be a big risk there. Maybe the least risky guy at the top is Jaren Jackson Jr., even though he got like 11 points a game at Michigan State in his one season there. But that's because, you know, he's already shooting, he's already defending, and he's already and he's not even 19 years old yet, can already show that he's doing those things. Seems to be a lock to be a star. And you could really make a good case that he might be the safest pick at number one, given his promise on both sides of the court. Then you got Mo Bamba, who seems to be gaining buzz right now up the boards, although I'm not sure if I believe it. That might be more of a smokescreen there. And someone hiding in plain sight is Michael Porter Jr. You're not hearing much about him lately. He had the medicals taken by the Chicago Bulls, and they're apparently going to be sharing those with other NBA teams. But the fact that you're not hearing anything about Michael Porter Jr. makes me believe that maybe he's the guy the teams are coveting. Because like we've said, teams do a pretty good job of hiding their intentions before the NBA draft. And like I said, my bold prediction, Ayton slips not only past one, but all the way to number three. And then Michael Porter goes in the top five, maybe even the top four. So you hear to hear first. Now, like I said, if we get more confirmation about Ayton going number one going forward, I could probably change my bold prediction on that. But we're not getting any reports that are sourced from inside of Phoenix quite yet that he's going number one. So until then, I reserve the right to make my bold claim here that Ayton slips all the way to number three. I also think that Marvin Bagley of Duke falls a little bit too, maybe in the 6-7 range, not at number four where he's at right now. Just the defensive troubles that kind of flag him right now. And with such good players at the top of this draft, you don't want to take a guy who you don't think will be excelling at both ends of the court. But you should be checking out that mock draft like I talked about. The Lockdown Podcast, we got the local experts on the biggest stories, and this is a good example of that with the Lockdown Podcast Network mock NBA draft available on the Lockdown NBA feed. I'm teasing them, also sending them along on my Twitter and Facebook accounts for this show as well. But after this, we got Today in Pistons playoff playback. Since we can't live in the present, we will relive the past with the Detroit Pistons in the playoffs here on Lockdown Pistons. New coaches in Detroit with the Pistons and the Lions. Check out Locked On Lions with Matt Derry of Detroit Radio as they talk about Matt Patricia and the new Lions era there. We got you covered on the Locked On Network, your team every day. Now it's time for Pistons playoff playback, going back first to 1989. Today is the anniversary, 29 years ago today. The clincher for the Pistons, the first NBA championship in team history. Magic tried to go in game three with the hamstring injury, and he was on the bench after 5 minutes. Pistons won that one by 4 points, 114 to 110, and it looked like only a matter of time. So then, 2 days later, June 13th, 1989, with Magic out of the lineup, Byron Scott already out of the lineup for the Lakers as well. Despite a valiant effort from James Worthy, who scored 40 points, the Pistons won the title 105 to 97. The bad boys did it. The Free Press headline the next day, not bad, boys. Ending Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's career with a 7-point effort there. 23 from Joe Dumars, leading a balanced effort for the Pistons. He would be named Finals MVP. The big play that sticks out to me from that game is the block that Dumars had of David Rivers towards the end of the game. And then in one motion just lands and also jumps to save the ball from going out of bounds on the baseline. Saves it to Bill Laimbeer. That one pretty much clinched the title. The clips of the guys chanting bad boys in the locker room with the champagne. A special one for Pistons fans there. Also today on Pistons Playoff Playback, fast forwarding one season. This one was June 12th, 1990, so 28 years ago yesterday. Game 4 in Portland with the Pistons up 2-1 in that series already. Terry Porter hits a free throw with 6.5 seconds left, brings the Portland deficit to 1. The Pistons break the press, and Gerald Henderson, in his first minute of the game, his only minute of the game, in there for some reason, probably for the ball handling on the getting the ball across half court there, but he gets the pass from James Edwards, lays the ball in uncontested with 1.3 seconds left instead of dribbling the clock out, as Hubie Brown later astutely pointed out that he should have done, and clearly he should have done. No timeout called for Rick Adelman in Portland, so Danny Young ends up with the ball on the pass inbounds. And what are Danny Young and Gerald Henderson doing in this game at the end? No, I looked at the box score. No Pistons guards had fouled out at that point. I don't know why Vinnie Johnson's not in there. But anyway, Young takes a dribble and drills it. Hubie and Dick Stockton thought it was good initially, but refs said that it was late. The CBS replays would prove them correct later on, and the Pistons got the win 112-109. But what if Danny Young's shot counts and Laimbeer's fouled out in overtime, and Portland comes back and makes that series 2-2 and has a big-time crowd going into Game 5. What could have been if the Rose Arena crowd was able to get things going in Game 5 with the 2-2 tie instead of being down 3-1 and 007 coming later, as we would know. But that one in Game 4, 32 points from Isaiah Thomas, 26 from Joe D in the first game since his father died, or since the second game since his father died, the first game since he found out that his father died at the end of Game 3. 20 points from Vinny Johnson off the bench, 34 for Clyde Drexler, 33 from Jerome Kersey. Not a great offensive player in those days, but a strong game from the athletic Jerome Kersey. Now, the late Jerome Kersey, he's passed away since then. Kevin Duckworth, the star center for the Portland Trailblazers, passed away since then as well. Drazen Petrovic, as we know, talked about the other day, he's dead too. Three of the nine guys who played in that game from Portland, all gone. Crazy, but I guess that's what happens when nearly 30 years have passed since that time. Thankfully, all the bad boys still with us to this day. Then Danny Young, by the way, I was searching on YouTube for the clips. Danny Young ended up on the Pistons in the 92-93 season, getting some run off the bench. I don't remember him, by the way. Maybe some of you older Pistons fans might remember that. But anyway, looked on the YouTube clips. On December 11th, 1992, so less than 2 years later, as a member of the Pistons, Young ends up hitting a shot at the end of the third quarter for the Pistons from half court, banking it in against the Cleveland Cavaliers, put them up 9 in that game on TNT, a game that the Pistons ended up winning by 4. But pretty weird that Young ended up fulfilling that half-court shot, but ended up being for the Pistons a couple years later instead of for the Trailblazers in a shot that was deemed after the buzzer. So then, June 13th, 2004, you guys remember this one, Pistons take a 2-1 lead into Game 4 at the Palace with the Lakers, a 20-point win in Game 3 gives them that 2-1 lead. So Game 4 was the big one. Lakers needed that win to climb back in the series. Teams were tied midway through the third, 49-49, in a typical Pistons score with about 5 minutes left in the third quarter. Rasheed Wallace and Slava Medvedenko get into it. That wakes up Sheed, which is what Doc Rivers said on the telecast that they shouldn't have done to waken up Rasheed Wallace. Sheed goes crazy, hits a bunch of shots, some circus shots in there included, finished with 26 points and 13 rebounds. Add that to 23 from Chauncey, and they were able to overcome a 36-20 from Shaq and also 20 from Kobe there. Pistons get the win, 88-80 is the final score there, and two nights later at the Palace, that series was over, and the Pistons would be champions for the third time. So some great YouTube clips out there. I'll tweet the one later on about Sheed with the highlights of that 2004 series there. So give us a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Also the Locked On Pistons Twitter feed at Locked On Pistons. And also give our Facebook page a like at Locked On Pistons-MattShook. Join in on the conversation. So thanks for listening, everyone. Check out that Locked On NBA podcast with the mock draft that we talked about earlier. And enjoy those through the week. And we'll talk to you later on here on Locked On Pistons. This is your host, Matt Shook. Have a good one, everyone.